Number 25, one should not eat anything which is not offered first to Krishna. So in deity worship, then whatever one is eating, then that should be offered to the deity. Like you have a deity in your house, and whatever you're cooking in the house and all this, that should be offered to the deity. So you can't cook anything in your house or cook anything in the temple that is not being offered to the deity. So that should always be done. So that, yeah. That also regulates what one eats, because then it should be something that can be offered to the deity, like that. So this keeps one very proper there. We did do that. Yeah, one should not fail to offer fresh fruit and grains to Krishna according to the season. We discussed that. After food has been cooked, no one should be offered... After food has been cooked, no one should be offered any foodstuff unless it is first offered to the deity. So there, it should always... Because we're cooking for Krishna, so it shouldn't be offered to someone else before that. Then, and one should plan like that. If one has some guests, or one has some, or there's some children, and, you know, they need to eat at irregular times and that, then always keep something that's been offered for them. So whenever they want to eat, then they'll eat. Especially children below 5. There's no regulation on when they eat, when they sleep, when they, you know, yell and scream or like that. And you can ask any mothers, they can tell you that the, like that. So, therefore, always keep something for them, so that if they get hungry, they can eat these things. You don't have to unnecessarily give to them. So this is specifically for the members of the family, you know, that they're very careful about that, or the pujaris themselves, like this. And one should not sit with his back towards the deity. So the idea is in the temple, then you're always facing the deity. The deity is the center of attention. So we don't sit with our back to the deity. That won't be done. Like that. If there's going to be some situation in the house where no one can pay attention or this or that, then it's better to close the curtains. And then do whatever one's doing. And then when one can pay attention, then they should be open. Like if people are going to be resting or all kinds of things, eating or different things like that. But otherwise, if it's time when the deities are open, then we should be properly sitting and facing the deity. 29. One should not offer obeisances silently to the spiritual master. Or in other words, one should recite aloud the prayers to the spiritual master while offering obeisances. So then, here these are offenses to the deity. So this means when one's offering obeisances to the deity, that the deity, the whole idea is the pleasure of the Lord is that we are the servant of His servant. That's what gives pleasure. We are the servant of His servant. That is what makes the relationship. That's what makes it nice. Like you see, that, like Prabhupada mentions, that the grandfather is more merciful than the father. So like that. So then that is because there's a special relationship there. The direct associate is very dear. So someone who is there, you know, who belongs to them, then that makes a different relationship, makes it very nice, very sweet. So then by offering obeisances, saying the prayers of the spiritual master, then the Lord can hear that, and then that reminds of the relationships that are there with the spiritual master, like that. 30. One should not fail to offer some praise in the presence of the spiritual master, but this shouldn't be just one is doing it. Just one has to be careful. Also, it should be practical. It should be natural, like that. We know the stories of one of Prabhupada's disciples named Vishal, who always used to offer prayers to Prabhupada. He'd even be walking backwards in front of Prabhupada with folded hands and offering prayers and all that. And so in America it went over okay, and then when he's in Vrindavan he was doing that, then, you know, a couple of days like that. But after about a few days, and Prabhupada just asked him very straightforward, "You don't have anything else to do?" And he pointed to some puddles of water around the temple, and he says, "Why don't you clean these up, you know, and do something useful, you know, like that." That So one should offer, but it should be when it's a natural time, one's there, one is praising, or something happens, what are you doing? Then we're doing this, and how is that going? Oh, by your grace, it's going nicely. This kind of thing, you know. Not that one has to unnecessarily go out of your way to say so many things and all that. Then, 31, one should not praise oneself before the spiritual master. So that is the other side of it. One should praise the spiritual master, praise the spiritual master's mission, the devotees, but oneself one doesn't praise. That is avoided. And 32, one should not deride the demigods before the deity. So the demigods are all the different parts and parcels of the Lord who are empowered to take care of some aspect of the Lord's creation. So to do that, to take care of all the aspects that Krishna is creating, maintaining, and destroying. Okay. So those are the main 32. And then there is... Yeah, then Prabhupada says, this is the list of 32 offenses. Besides these, there are a number of offenses which are mentioned in the Varaha Purana. They are as follows. So these are extra other than the 32. The 32 are the main, and then these other ones are also mentioned. One should not touch the deity in a dark room. No one likes to be touched when it's dark and you can't see who's touching, you know, like that. So when the lights goes off, one doesn't touch the deities, or it's off, you're waking the deities. First, the lamp has to be on. And generally in the deity room, always a lamp is lit. So therefore, there's no time when the deity room is fully dark. There's always lamps inside the deity room. Then one can always putting the deity to rest. There's always some light waking them up. There's always some light. So like that, then there's always a Sudarshan. Light more wicks on those, especially these ones in the corner. Light all five. Number two. One should not fail to strictly follow the rules and regulations in worshipping the deity. So these different rules and regulations are there because we don't have the natural love for the Lord to spontaneously be interested to serve Him in so many ways. So the rules and regulations are there to ensure that, one, we know what to do, so we do the things that the Lord likes, and two, so that we're regular in doing whatever we do. Otherwise, one day we're very enthusiastic, we do so many things, and the next day we're not very enthusiastic, we don't do any of that, like this. That is the difficulty in the conditioned nature. So the rules are there. The rules are actually given by the Lord. Krishna, the whole process of deity worship is spoken by Krishna himself to Brahma. That in the very beginning, after hearing the Vedas, then when Brahma lost the Vedas to the Madhu and Kaitava demons, he asked Krishna to again recite the Vedas again, all the four Vedas. But he said that before that, please you give just the essence, you know, what is the actual purpose and the essence of the Vedas, because just in case I die before you finish the whole Veda, because it's quite large, then you give me the essence so that I know, like that, so I can be benefited. So for five nights, then Krishna spoke the essence of the Vedic literature as the Pancharatra, the five nights. So the Pancharatra is the process of deity worship, so that's coming directly from Krishna, and it's the essence of the Veda. And then that comes to us in these forms. So Lord Chaitanya then again spoke these truths to Sanatan Goswami. And Sanatan Goswami recorded them in Hari Bhakti Vilas. So then these rules cannot be avoided in the worship of the deity. If one doesn't want to follow so many rules, then one should then take up the Bhagavat Marg purely and just chant Hare Krishna all day. Like that. Chant, preach, read Bhagavatam, but only do that. Then it's fine. But if one finds that one needs some regulation in the life, you know, one has to eat, one has to sleep, right? Because the Goswamis didn't bother with that so much.
you know, now and again, like we see. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he'd be chanting his rounds. And if his stomach would grumble and growl too much and get like that, you know, he'd get upset and then take some dirt just in the ground in front of him and eat that and then tell his stomach to be satisfied with that and quit bothering him. You know? So it's like the body is seen as such a separate entity, which it is, but it's just directly seen like that. It's just a burden. So it's there, it has to eat, okay. Like that. So he did like that. So if we need these things, we need to be regulated. So the Vedic literature in the form of the Pancharatra, that is our regulation. Any regulation we have, it's all Pancharatra. It's all from Hari Bhakta Vilas. It's not from somewhere else. Sometimes devotees will quote from others that they are, how you say? That it is, you know, Karmakanda and it is all this and it's kind of a lower platform. But Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur both highly recommended it. Sanatana Goswami wrote it. You know, had Gopal Bhatta Goswami compile all the quotes and everything like that. Then Sanatana Goswami wrote the commentary on it. Gaudiya Math published it. Like this. So it's a very important work. Has all of our rules and regulations are in there. So it can't be ignored. It cannot be ignored. When it says that it is for uplifting those on the platform of karma, then basically that means anyone who is starting devotional service as a kanista. So if there's anybody who doesn't start at kanista, you know, at 12 years old, they go down to the Padma River and they take bath there at the Padma River. And then Padma Devi herself comes personally and hands them the Gauranga Prema that Lord Chaitanya personally left to Padma Devi to give to that person. And then at 12 years old, they go from having a regular, you know, the regular local complexion into having a golden form, and they're dancing in ecstasy and transcendental symptoms of ecstasy are manifesting in body, then you don't need the Pancharatra. I'll agree. But if that's not happening, you know, if we're not starting off at least from the first time we come in contact from devotional service and we go through the Kanista platform in a moment, you know, and we start on the Madhyam platform, which there, people do, but unless that is our platform, we need it. Because the Pancharatra, it means the whole thing of how you get up, how you bathe, how you dress, putting our tilak. You know, the Babaji's all put their tilak, but the tilak is mentioned in Hari Bhakta Vilas. Nectar of Devotion just says, wear tilak. But the ritual of how you put it, the mantras you chant, what it looks like, what is the shape, which places on the body, that's Hari Bhakta Vilas. Nectar of Devotion says, chant Hare Krishna. Hari Bhakta Vilas says, chant on beads, 108 beads, big bead to small bead, that they're tied with the Brahma Granthi, a figure eight knot, which is a pure knot, that you have the main bead, the Krishna bead. You don't cross that bead. You don't chant with your, you know, your index finger. That's all Hari Bhakti Vilas. You know, read Srimad Bhagavatam. Don't put the Bhagavatam on the floor. It should be kept properly. You know, what is the proper respect for the Bhagavatam? That's Hari Bhakti Vilas. Like that. How to do service in the Dham, different things that one can do, that's Hari Bhakti Vilas. So even if one wants to claim that one is, you know, leaving all these different lower aspects and one will just take the top aspect, where are they getting their ritual from? That means if they're below Uttama, where they'll just wander in the streets chanting Hare Krishna all day and not worry whether it's day or night, whether they eat or don't eat, whether they're dressed or not dressed, then if they're below that platform, even those essential points are from Hari Bhakti Vilas. So the rules of deity worship cannot be ignored. Like that. They cannot be ignored. Three. One should not enter the temple of the deity without first making some sound. So one always calls attention. One doesn't suddenly walk in on somebody. One always does something. I've seen it's a very common thing in the... I noted it. I mean, I didn't... It wasn't consciously noticed, but then when someone pointed it out to me, I noticed that it does happen in so many places. That you'll even see in the house, when the man of the house will be coming into an area where children are, the wife is, or, you know, some other persons like that, before coming in the room, some sound will be made, not necessarily knocking and this or that, some cough, some clearing the throat. Something is there, and then everyone knows, oh, it's coming, and then they can make arrangements properly, no? Yeah. It's just the way it's done. Because the point is neither does the person walking into the room want to, you know, come into a scene that's not proper, and neither do those who are being walked in on want to be in a scene that's improper. So the whole idea is that, in any case, this is just the proper way to do. You come to somebody's house, you make some sound, you knock on the door, even if you walk in, you know, like that. You know, you'll knock on the door, yoo-hoo, or something. You'll do some, huh? Surprise, Haribo. Like that. Something will be there, because it's just the way nature is, because Krishna is like that. Krishna doesn't want you just walking in like that, you know. Or like in the temples, you have lamps. Lamps are nice. You turn on the lamp, you come with some light, turn on the lamp, and slowly the room gets light in the morning. So that's pleasant, you know. No one likes coming in and somebody flicks on a 1,000-watt halogen lamp right in your eyes, and, you know, no one will go for that. Like that. So in the temples, it used to be you have many lamps. You start with lighting one, then it's two, then three, and then slowly the room gets full of light. So we should also take that into consideration if we have electricity in the, you know, electric lamps in the deity room, that there are some lights that you can turn on that aren't the ones that are for the darshan. Right? Like that. The heavy lights for darshan are for our satisfaction, not for the Lord's. Like, we're the ones that want to see the fine, you know, subtle colors in the dress. Like that. You know, the Lord is wearing the dress, you know, and he's happy if the devotees are happy. It's nicely made. It's the devotion in which it's appreciated by the devotees. So like that. For darshan, then these heavy lights should be on. But when it's not darshan, better there's some lighter light. You know, that's not so heavy. And that can be turned on when you're waking the deities or doing the different things just before putting them to rest. And that. And then, like this. So there's some gradualness.
There's some question on the previous point. Is there any bona fide translation of Haribhakti Vilas?
So any bona fide translation? Whatever Bhanu Maharaj translated, and that has all been put into the Pancharatra Pradeep. So what's in there is all information from Hari Bhakti Vilas. Sometimes you see the verse will be quoted, what it is, but otherwise Bhanu Maharaj translated mainly the rituals, because in there's so much glorification of why something is done, the glorification of it, you know, the benefits of it, even the karmakanda benefits of it, and then, you know, what are the problems if you don't do it, and all that will be in there. So it's a very, very large book like that. And it's also mentioned that it is for the four sampradayas, in that all the four sampradayas can find their conclusions in it, in deity worship. So it catches quite a broad range. So in the Tika, then Sanatana Goswami points out what's specifically like our line, like that. So the various aspects of the rituals that will be appreciated by all the other sampradayas, that we have a solid system. Then everything's there. But then certain aspects of simplification, like on, it'll talk about guru, you know, guru should, you know, have these qualities, that quality. It's not necessarily what we're looking for. Normally, just qualities, not too much hair, not too little hair, not too this, not too that, all these different things. And after giving, quoting from so many different scriptures and telling all these different things, then at the end he'll say, but if he knows about Krishna, then that's the main qualification. Then all these other ones don't matter. Like that. So then he also points out just what is the conclusion of these, all these different rules. Because there's so many rules in the deity worship. Like that. But the point is, if you know Krishna, then everything's perfect. Like that. If one doesn't know Krishna so much, then one might look for more of these material things, because that's signs of piety or impiety. Right? Just like it, Hari Bhaktivilas mentions, one should not accept a disciple that has chronic disease, because that means there's a lot of heavy sin there. And so that will be a great problem for the spiritual master. Right? But in the process of devotional service, chanting the holy name is so powerful that this is not a major consideration. As long as that disciple is very fixed in devotional service. But if they're not, then you have to watch, because it may be such an abundance of previous sin, it makes it hard to fix the mind. Right? So the chronic disease can affect their Krishna consciousness. But if it's seen it doesn't affect their Krishna consciousness, it doesn't matter. Right? Because Krishna consciousness is more powerful than any pious or impious reaction to material activities. You understand? So therefore, we don't generally worry about these things. But they're mentioned there, because one should know actually the whole thing, what's going on. You know, the whole process, what's happening. Like that. But within that, you should know the conclusions. Right? You understand?
Why is it, it's mentioned that Hari Bhakti Vilas is mainly meant for the grihasthas?
It could, because most all the... All is, how you say? Prabhupada explains that because they're having to engage so much more material, how you say, activities and senses and facilities, then they need the direction how to engage all those things. Right? Like you take a brahmachari. They're not engaging so many of the senses or so much facility. You know, they don't have a house, they don't have so many different things. So now the grihastha has a house. So how to engage that house in Krishna's service? So therefore the rule is they make their house a temple. Right? Then whatever is cooked in the house they offer to the deity. The brahmachari is just, he's not cooking for himself. He's living in ashram, he cooks for the ashram. Or, you know, like these. So it's in a temple he's doing for that. So the grihastha needs the directions. So all those extra more rules that are there, or it's not so much more rules, it's just the complete rules. So all the rules apply for the grihasthas. And then for the brahmachari, sannyasis, and less of the rules apply, because they don't have those facilities. Right? So the understanding the full thing, then that's specifically important for the grihasthas, because then they can engage all their senses very nicely in the Lord's service. Understood?
Like that.
It was compiled by Gopal Bhatta Goswami. See, Sanatana Goswami told him what things to look for. Gopal Bhatta Goswami did the research work, compiled everything like that. Then Sanatana Goswami put it together into the book form, and then after wrote a commentary. Like that. It's said that Gopal Bhatta Goswami wrote a commentary also, but the commentary that's available nowadays doesn't appear to be the original, or it's been heavily interpolated. So we don't accept that. We only accept Sanatana Goswami's. Somebody's done something with it. Any other questions on that?
So for us to know the rules of Hari Bhakti Vilas, if we read the Pancharatra Pradeep,
Pancharatra Pradeep gives the whole... It means whatever's in Pancharatra is there in its essential form. It means you'll find a lot of the book is not just on what we would call deity worship. But it's all the things that we do, getting up, taking our bath, putting our tilak, or taking prasadam, taking care of guests, serving devotees, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting, worshipping Tulsi, worshipping the Dham. So it covers all those different aspects. Then in the middle of the book, then it deals with the ritual itself. Four. One should not offer any foodstuff to the deity which has been seen by dogs or other lower animals. Because when they see, they don't know that this is an offering or that, so they may get lusty. They may have a desire to eat it. So that goes into the food. So we may not notice, but Krishna notices. So whenever we're carrying bhoga, then we should always cover it with a cloth, some nice cloth. If the room where we're making the plate and the deity room are right next to each other, you just go from the kitchen straight in, then it may not be necessary. Like that if it's a small place. But if one has to go out in any place where someone other than a pujari who is doing service then, you know, who's making ready or going to do the offering or something, that he knows that this is the offering, then it should be covered. Like that. Even if it's short distance, best it's covered. Because someone who doesn't know, they don't know whether it's prasad or bhog, like that. Because it's in that area, they have a tendency to figure it might be. But the first thought may be, you know, oh, is this prasad? And then you get an idea by the seriousness on the pujari's face that it's not prasad, unless he's very serious about taking the plate somewhere before anybody else gets it. But you know, but otherwise, then, you know. Then it's best it's covered. It should always be done like that. Generally, the tradition is Vaishnavas don't eat, sleep, or take bath in public. So generally, what you're eating or going to eat wouldn't be seen by those who are outside of who's going to be eating. You know, eating, serving, or like that. Generally, it would be like that. So even you have stuff you're going to eat, you wouldn't carry it on the road open. You know, like we buy some mahaprasad and then we walk from there to wherever we live with just holding it and on our hand being seen. Because then, if anybody else has a desire to eat it, then when we eat, then we might find, depending on how heavy that desire was, either some, you know, sometimes it can affect the stomach, slight stomach ache, total indigestion, even when you can get sick, like that. So if people see who are not eating and they have a desire to eat, that will affect us, and sometimes very, very strongly. So it's generally, you know, but if prasad is distributed, it's one thing if some are sitting and eating, some are waiting, if they'll get prasad, then that effect won't be there. But if they're seeing others eat and then they don't, then that's not so good. You know? So, yes. It's how you say. You'd have to ask the pujaris exactly why they leave the curtain open. You know, I wouldn't be able to speculate anything more than probably the people aren't quite too sure what a, you know, round orange thing is with a white top, because in Bengal you don't see them. You know, while if it's like rice and dal, they can relate to it. You know, that's the only reason I could think why they don't. But otherwise, you'd have to ask them. Because the normal thing is at least if it's an offering, something in between, they should put up some little curtain or something so that they can't see what's being offered. I think in Jagannath Puri, when they do it, they have it, it's like the room that they offer is below ground level. So they put everything in there. Jagannath can see into it and see all the preparations, but people who are taking darshan can't see because it's below the ground. Like that. So it's tradition is it shouldn't be seen. And then they'll also put up, I've heard, a very thin cloth. It just like goes in front of his mouth, so you can't see his mouth. Like that. You have to ask the Pujaris why. Because I remember before they used to put a little half curtain. But why they don't now, I don't know. Number five, one should not break silence while worshiping. So silence means that material talk. If one, anything material, that's considered breaking the silence. But if it's something about Krishna, about service, and it's in the proper mood and the proper situation, that's not breaking the silence. So it should be something about the service, this and that. You know, you don't start talking about the cricket match or the latest politics or anything like that. And while it's doing service, the deity worship, then during that time, they either say nothing, chant Hare Krishna, offering prayers, or just some discussions about the deity worship itself. That's fine. Like that. If it's too serious, too big of an elaborate thing and too much discussion, then better to go outside the deity room and discuss it there, then come back in. But if it's a simple thing, then that can always be done. It said, six, one should not pass urine or evacuate while engaged in worshiping. So it's planned that, you know, one's life in such a way that during the time of worship, one doesn't have to go to the bathroom. This should be avoided. Because you're doing some service for Krishna, and then that service has to stop while you disappear. You know, so that's not very nice. You know, like somebody's going to serve prasad, and halfway through they excuse themselves and go off to the bathroom, come back 10 minutes later. You know, you just have to sit there. Or you're taking your bath, and then, you know, everything stops. So that's not proper. So these things should be done first. And then the deity worship should go uninterrupted, and then after it's finished, then can do it again. So you may find that one may not, you know, drink, you know, once 2.5 liters of water before Mangal Artik, and then afterwards go into the deity room. You know, these kind of things one might avoid. Like that. Yes?
This rule applies in the kitchen also, when cooking.
In the kitchen also? Yeah, unless one's boiling water. If all one's doing is boiling water, then it's not such a problem. But if you're cooking anything else, generally the time that you spend away, you might end up in disaster. Because the whole thing is the cooking, it's the consciousness. Krishna eats the consciousness. So if while the preparation is cooking, you're in the toilet, you know, it's not, you know, you're not necessarily going to have the best, you know, unless one is in total anxiety that one has left the kitchen, then maybe, you know. But that's the point. Is the kitchen is an extension of the deity room. Prabhupada mentioned that. So the deity room and the kitchen should be of the topmost standards of cleanliness and consciousness, because this is where everything happens. Consciousness is good in the kitchen, all the devotees in the temple, the consciousness go up. Consciousness is bad in the kitchen, consciousness, the whole temple goes down. Consciousness in the deity room is good, then everybody is in good consciousness. That's bad, it goes down. So if your pujaris or cooks are in bad consciousness, it will affect the whole temple. And if they're in good consciousness, then everything will be nice.
Sometimes they say these rules are only for the deity room only. We have a deity room and again a Nath Mandir, I mean the extension of the temple room where we have regular classes and the treatments and all. It's considered the Nath Mandir, I mean they're having everything. So they say these rules are only for the deity room where the deities are there only, but that section only.
It means which rules?
These
Seva Aparads. Yeah. It's funny because most of them seem to be outside the deity room. You know, like let's say one should not enter the temple of the deity in a car or palanquin with shoes on the feet. So that would mean the pujari room only. It means you could go with shoes and palanquins into the temple room, into the Nath Mandir. Right? Or one should not have failed to observe various festivals for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such as Janmashtami or Ratha Yatra. So as long as you're in the deity room, you must follow those. And if you're in the temple room, you don't have to follow them at all. Especially if you're out on the street, you know, Ratha Yatra and stuff like that. It's not in the deity room. Right? Isn't that what they're saying? One should not avoid bowing down before the deity. Strange, we don't bow down in the temple room. So then this must be a totally interpolated thing stuck in here by the smartas, right? You understand? So this is what this rule here means. One should not fail to strictly follow the rules and regulations in worshipping the deity. That's why it's there. That's why Rupa Goswami in the second verse says, Niyamagraha. Because it is the tendency. The Kanista will do one of two things by nature. Overly follow the rules and regulations fanatically, or throw them out the window and make comments like that. That the rules apply in the deity room and not in the temple room. That is called Niyamagraha. Right? When we say, I'm going to the temple, means I'm going into the deity room. Then, all you see in the temple, it's Krishna's house. It all belongs to him. So at least that much is his. You know, we may say, you know, the Brahmachari ashram or some of these other places aren't his. You know, you go in and look at them, you know, you might get that opinion. But in the deity room, the temple room or the kirtan hall, the pujari room, paraphernalia room, the kitchen, wherever you store all your dresses and all the deity stuff, that is the deity's place. And that must be on the top standard, and all these rules apply. All these rules apply. So there's no question that they don't apply. Right? These are, one has to be very careful. And study. In other words, deity worship is one of the main aspects. Pancharatra and Bhagavat, these are our two lines of a train. So, for the conditioned living entity, he can't claim he knows Bhagavat without knowing Pancharatra. Because how will they get there? Right? I have a conditioned body. I have a conditioned mind, intelligence, and ego. Right? The Bhagavat Marg says, I am a servant of Krishna. That is my identity. I chant Hare Krishna. Right? I hear the glories of the Lord. I chant the glories of the Lord. That's Bhagavat. And to speak those things to everybody else. Right? So all the rules and regulations that go to regulate my body and mind, this is Pancharatra. You know, that we sit down on the floor, we sit in the line, we eat with our right hand, you know, like that. That we use our beads, how we use, we have the bead bag, how we have it. We dress how we do, we put on tilak, we wear neck beads. These are all Pancharatra. So we can't, there's no, Pancharatra is our main religious, our religion. Right? The philosophy has to have a religion. Right? Philosophy doesn't mean a whole lot if there's no religion. Right? Because the philosophy has to be practiced in our life. So the religion is how that the culture and the form of it, the rules, the regulations, the restrictions, everything that guides us. So the difficulty comes is that the modern culture does not appreciate any regulation, any restriction, or any subservience to authority. And that is the whole purpose of the Pancharatra and the Vedic culture. So it's not very popular. You'll find devotees will write off the rules and regulations of the Pancharatra and the Varnashram very easily. Very easily. But the Western culture and those rules and regulations, very difficult to give up. Very difficult. So Niyamagraha is very contemporary. Because there's always been people who are either fanatic or don't want to follow. You know? There has been since the beginning of creation. There was at the time of the Goswamis when they compiled these books. And there is still today. And there will be in the future. Therefore, they've made this point very strongly. That is an offense to avoid them. Like that. To say stuff like that. What does that mean? In the temple room, you can pass air and burp and lay down and sleep in front of the deities? You know what I'm saying? We have to read Prabhupada's books. You know? This book, Prabhupada said, this is the law book. So law book means it's full of rules and regulations and examples, you know, how it's been followed in the past. So here it is. I mean, you take all these. Don't sleep in front of the deity. One should not enter the temple to worship the Lord without having washed one's hands and feet after eating. That means you can just go into the temple room, sit down and give Bhagavatam class without washing your hands and feet after eating. Because that's an extension. It doesn't matter. I mean, you read all of these and you find one. One should not talk very loudly before the deity. One should not talk with others before the deity. One should not cry or howl before the deity. One should not quarrel or fight before the deity. One should not chastise anyone before the deity. One should not be charitable to beggars before the deity. Yeah, I mean, it's an everyday occurrence that beggars are in the deity room, right? And one has to really control oneself to keep from offering charity to them, right? Isn't it? I mean, you've done puja. It's not one of the major aspects of the day. It's beggars are always in the deity room. Right? So all these things, what do they mean? These are meaning in the deity room, in the temple room, or even in any situation where you're with somebody who's senior and respectable. Right? So these apply to the spiritual master, to, you know, senior devotees, like this, any formal situation. Right? You're at a formal situation. Can you just lie down on the floor and go to sleep? Can you pass air? Can you shout and scream at people? No. So the whole point is before authority, one cannot do these things. And Krishna is the supreme authority. So not only in the deity room, in the temple, or with any senior, in any situation that warrants proper decorum, you can't do these things. Because Krishna is the authority. It is his potency that is there in the senior devotees, in the temple president, in the GBC, in the mother, in the father, in the police, in the, you know, ministers or the king or prime minister, whoever has a position of authority and power, that is coming from Krishna. So in all these situations, one must properly follow. So this is why this is our culture. If we just see it as dry rules and regulations, it will always be dry rules and regulations. We'll never have any inspiration to follow it. We see this is how you relate to people. Right? How you relate to people. If you can't do these things for Krishna, guaranteed 101% in the home, no grihastha will be able to be, how you say? Successful. at running a marriage. Guaranteed. Can't be. Because if someone can't do these, it means they're so gross and insensitive. How are they going to interface with people that they live with all day? Not possible. So you take care of Krishna nicely, and you're sensitive to these, it makes you sensitive to everything else. Why? Because the family is also devotees of Krishna. They're connected to Krishna. They're part and parcel of Krishna. So if you can't follow these for Krishna, one won't notice them at all. Not possible. One doesn't know about them, that's another thing. But someone who is willing to follow and be properly behaved in situations that require it, then they know how to be sensitive. And then that sensitivity, then they can use with others. Right? Like that. If you can be sensitive to the Lord, you can be sensitive to others. So the Kanista by nature is not sensitive to others. But he may be willing to be sensitive to the Lord, just because he's bigger than everybody. You know? So it's kind of like, okay, we can agree to that. But with time, as one matures, one starts to see that everybody is part and parcel of the Lord. Therefore, I have to behave nicely with them also. Right? If I actually have affection for the Lord, I have to have affection for everybody else also. Then in that way, seeing that all that in connection with the Lord, it becomes Krishna conscious. But if I can't follow these, but I profess that I have so much, I'm so careful with everybody and so sensitive and all that, I don't believe it. It's not possible. It's a show. Not possible. It's not possible. You go out into the world and see people who are like welfare workers and things like that. Very gentle people. If you bring them to the temple, they'll be very careful. They want to know, what do I do here, what do I do there? You introduce them, this is our president here of our temple. They'll be very respectful, glad to meet you. They'll be very, very nice. They're very sensitive people. But if someone is insensitive to authority, but claims to be sensitive to the people, it's not possible. It's a show. It's a show. So these rules are not just for the deity room for those few pujaris, and then everybody else can just do whatever they want. You know? No. These rules are for the temple room. And the principles of them are for everywhere. Right? Just like you're at a job. Here it says here. One should not praise himself before the spiritual master. Let's say you have a job, and you have naturally every job has a boss. And you go in front of the boss and start praising yourself in front of the boss. Is that going to be appreciated? No. So that's the point. No, these whole things are just natural human things. And so the whole idea is Krishna, through interacting with himself, he's teaching us what is real culture. What is actual sensitivity to others. You don't touch the deity in the dark. I can say, well, there's no light on. So don't touch the deity. Go find a light. Well, it's not practical. I mean, so then where's the love for the Lord? He doesn't like being touched in the dark. So if you touch him in the dark, where's the love? Right? Prabhupada mentions, if we're not willing to follow the rules and regulations, where is the affection for the deity? There is no affection. Because our only means to gain that affection is through these rules. We don't have another system. Right? We're chanting Hare Krishna, but Rupa Goswami says, when I chant, when the holy name dances on my tongue, I wish I had millions of tongues. And when this sound then enters my ear, I wish I had millions of ears. So that is the chanting of the holy name. So if we're chanting and we're not having that effect, then we naturally need to be able to follow these rules and regulations to control our material contamination and urges that keep us from tasting the name like Rupa Goswami is talking about. Because that's the natural nature of the soul, is that. But because it's covered by the material desire, we can't taste it. Right? We don't have to develop Krishna consciousness, which is not there. All the qualities of the soul that is talked about, those are already there. They're just covered by our material desires. So we have to remove those material desires and automatically they're there. Right? Like humility is a natural quality of the soul. Right? Cleanliness, natural quality of the soul. So all you have to do is remove the false ego and remove just the whole, you know, uncultured behavior. These things automatically come. But the only way to remove them is through devotional service. Then it works very nicely. So they have to be followed. But one should know why they're done, everything like that. One has doubts, that's the whole process of Krishna consciousness. You read something, you have a question, then one should find out the answer. And then when that question is answered, then in that satisfied state, then one can say, yes, now I must follow. But when one doesn't understand, one can't just say that, oh, this is for only the deity room, doesn't apply to the temple room. Can't say that. If they say that, then they have to read this. It says the temple. Otherwise it would say the deity room. Right? Prabhupada does know the difference between the temple and the deity room. Also Rupa Goswami. So if it's only the deity room, like that. So you can understand, don't touch the deity in the dark would mean in the deity room. You know? Generally he's not in the temple. You know, maybe he's come out, there's an abhishek, the lights go off, you don't touch the deity. Lights go back on, then you start again. Okay. So one has to take the process of devotional service more seriously. It's a complete process. Like that. It's a complete process. That's why it's called the complete science. The nectar of devotion, the complete science of bhakti yoga. Right? Bhakti rasamrita sindhu, you can say the nectar of the ocean of devotion. The Prabhupada has put as the subtitle, the complete science of bhakti yoga. So he got to the essence. This is the complete science. So this is all within the realm of sadhana bhakti. And this can be followed either by vaidhi or rag. Right? Both. This is sadhana bhakti. That they're little kids. Like that. That happened when they were 5 years old. So generally at that time. Means you won't see that after he's gone to Mathura and he's gone to the Gurukul. Then you won't see that anymore. But up to that time. That's why it's more fun being Vaishyas. Vaishyas don't worry about all these things too much. You know, the Kshatriyas, the Brahmins, they're highly restricted. You know? But the Vaishyas get to do all those things, you know. Brahman gets up first thing, takes his bath, goes, chants all his mantras. Kshatriyas do the same thing. Vaishyas get to get up and they go out and take care of the cows and they play a little bit, this and that. Then they come back and take their bath. And then right after the bath, they eat. And then after that, then they go out into the, you know, then after eating, then they go out into the field. You know? So it's like, so it just gives rise to more interesting things. Like that. So it's important what he, there's also the point of, they say, following in the footsteps and imitating. So a simple definition is following in the footsteps means following the instructions. And imitating means just doing what they do. You know? Like that. You know, like the, like you see so many Babaji's, and they imitate by they put on some cloth that they, you know, expected the Goswamis wore, some little piece of cloth, this, that. So many things. But that's just imitation. By putting on the cloth and they figure they become Babaji's, you know. But actually it's by following the instructions of the Goswamis. Then only one becomes, you know, properly situated. So when Krishna said that one should eat with the right hand, then that's what we do. Yeah. Also, you don't hear of it described like that any other place but in that particular pastime. That's another aspect. That's also a very good possibility. Because it's like this, you have Lord Brahma, and simply because he was holding the prasad in his left hand and he was eating off of other boys' plates, so they were taking from their plate and putting in his mouth, he figured this can't be God. So just by doing those two things, it's very simple, you know. Then one can, you know. Then you have all this nice pastime, where he gets to be, you know, that receive the parental affection of every resident of Vrindavan and every cow, like that. So it's just because this is the time of tasting parental affection. So then he was able to expand that by. And at the same time, teach Lord Brahma a lesson. Like that. Is that okay?
In the case of following and imitating, there is a subtle line between them. For example, the spiritual master is offering obeisances, okay, we also offer obeisances. And is it really following or imitating that, and then that kind of things? You know? Like we're standing slokas actually, you know, before giving Bhagavatam class, and if we try to learn the slokas and if we try to repeat them also when we try to give a class and like that, then is it following or imitating?
No, it depends upon the purpose. If it's a matter of, we see that these are the shlokas that the spiritual master uses to preach and to establish this point, and in that mood, therefore, we should learn them and then use them to establish those points. That's following the footsteps. But if we think, oh, if I just learn these shlokas and quote these, then I'll be a big advanced devotee, that's imitating. Right? So if it's in the mood of service, trying to imbibe their example, you know, that's based on their instruction. Because we have also heard that one should always hear about and chant about the Lord, and that how you say, austerity of the tongue is to back up what one says with scripture. So then when we see the example of that, then this is the example. So we're following the instruction, though it may not be, how you say, it may not be the precept, but it's the example. So both are important. You know, hearing the instructions, seeing the example. You understand? Like that. So that's what we should say. Okay. Seven. One should not offer incense without offering some flour. So this is the, at least the minimum of the duparti. Because the incense, you're getting scents and all that, that are from the, how do you say, they're all coming from flowers, or they're coming from the earth. So Krishna's natural, how do you say, scents are then the flowers. It means these flowers take the dirt and extract from that what is the smell of the earth. And then that comes out very nicely in the flowers. So the flower is Krishna's scents that he established. So we're offering incense, which are things that we've put together. But the flowers should also be there. You know? So then both are there. So you have this variety. Because the flowers are also nice, they're cooling. They look very beautiful. Like that. So there's more to that. They touch, the touch is very, very nice. While in the incense you only get the smell. You know, you don't get the other aspects.
So the point is we have to offer incense before offering the flowers.
No, it's not that we have to offer incense before the flowers. If we're offering incense, we should also offer flowers. Like that. Yeah, so when we're offering an artik, then there should be incense and flowers. So we see the minimum is incense and flowers. And then otherwise, then you have the full artik.
You know? When you offer the bhoga, we just offer only incense like that?
Because you're offering bhoga, like that. Here is offering incense as a offering. There it's the bhoga is being offered, and you may also light incense to create a nice atmosphere that's there. You understand? So that's a technical point of worship, is one has to know what is the situation in which one is worshiping. So offering bhoga is one of the main situations, or when one is dressing and ornamenting the Lord, you know, like this, that's another situation, when one is receiving the Lord, or bathing the Lord, or putting the Lord to rest. So you're putting the Lord to rest, so you may also put incense and all that. But generally you'll see is when you make the bed, flowers are there. So incense is burning, but flowers are in the bed. Or when you're offering the meal, is incense may be there, but after the meal, then one's offering garlands, right? And you'll see in the Pancharatra Pradeep there, is in the tradition, is after the meal, then chandan and garlands and like dinkpan and all these things are offered. So they're there. They may not be, they're not exactly at the same time, right? You don't have the incense in one hand and the flowers in the other. You're offering one and you're offering the other, but it goes together. So in the situation, the two should be offered. Right? In whatever the form. Just like one may have incense burning when one is receiving the Lord, but there's also, you know, in when washing the feet or like that, flowers are there, or one's offering garlands. You know, like this, when one's receiving. So they go together, like that. There's, you know, flowers in the bathing water, you know, then during that puja, you know, like that. So in that situation, there's also flowers and incense. So in all of them, you see they're there, though they may be in different forms. Does that make sense? Like that.
One devotee was saying that, like, when we take prasadam, we should not light the incense because it's not a combination. Is it right?
Means the point is the incense has a strong smell, and when you eat, then the taste and all that is also dependent upon smell. Like if you block your nose, you can't taste anything. So if you're smelling the incense, you can't really get the fine taste of what's being eaten. Like that. So, like that. I also think when Prabhupada was eating, he wouldn't use the fan. Because that would blow away and also make it cold. And I think when the service told me he didn't like incense burning while he was eating. Because you can't taste properly. So generally, it would be that after the offering, then you would light incense and keep a, you know, like during the whole day, keep the, you know, the fragrance and that in the room. This, like that. especially if you have a chemical incense and whatever you're eating. They definitely don't go together. You know.
Then, sorry, how do you think actually when we offer incense, when we offer to go to the Lord, whether that can have it?
Generally, it's being done in the form of flowers. Gandha Pushpa is done as sandalwood paste and flowers. You know? The dub deep is generally part of the dressing and that kind of that aspect. It's not so important in the afterwards it can be done. I'm saying after the meal you sit in a place and rest and you light some incense, that's very, very nice. Right? But otherwise it's not so important during the meal. Like that.
Yeah, the same thing for the when you offer the burger to the Lord also.
That's the point. Is during the time of offering the boga, that 15 minutes, it's not so important that incense is burning. You can have incense burning the whole rest of the day, but that time is not so important. But, you had some. Yeah.
I was just on the question from the comment you made before. You were talking about the Vaishnavas that they go out in the morning and they clean the cows, they come back and take the shot. When do they get time for their spiritual practices?
Generally, well, see, what we're talking about in the pastimes themselves or manifestation here is that.
I'm trying to connect it. It's related to the manifestations here.
Because there, Krishna is the deity. So that's the thing. So here, generally, they'll be doing all that before they go out. They'll get up a little earlier. You know, the Krishna is just getting up just as it gets light, right? Because he's been all night with the gopis. The cowherd boys are already there before he wakes up. You know, they've already bathed and dressed and done all that thing. He's getting up later. You know? So then all these things. When they wake up in the morning, the Brahmins are already chanting the mantras, doing the yajnas and all that. So they wake up to all that. So here, then they get up, they take their bath, they do all those things just like any devotee does. Like that. Because you don't take the cows out in the Brahma Muhurta. You know? Once the sun comes up, then the cows have to go out.
The activities will start earlier than the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas.
Yeah, like that. Because the cows are cows. They got to, it's time they got to go. You know, it's like as soon as the sun comes up, they're hungry. They want to go eat and chew on the grass and all that.
So that means they have less time for those
practices? It just means they, you know, chant while they're tending the cows or in the evening. Like that. That's if they're doing that. If they're doing business, then the business opens a little later. But still, they have difficulty. It was interesting. We had some boys who were in the school, and they were always reluctant to get up in the morning for Mangalarti. But now that they're grown up and they're running their own businesses, they say that now we're forced to get up. We have to get up at, you know, 3, 4 in the morning, get up early, chant a few rounds, eat, and then, you know, go off to work and then open the business and all that, things like that. So they say, you know, just by the desire to make money, we have to get up early. You know, he says, otherwise you can't do your business. You have to be up early. You know, so then they, you know, saw the value of all those years of practice going to Mangalarti. Now they can use it to get to business early, open the business. You know what time is it now?
Sorry.
Yeah, okay. So we'll stop. Is it on this point, Mati? Yes. Generally, we see it's normally done when you're receiving them. like that, receiving and like that, you know, if it's more formal. But otherwise, see, in the whole process when you're worshiping the Lord, the you're putting garlands and all that before. Then, after the meal, then again they're being offered. So they're always being, it's always going on. See, it's after the meal, is then it's a very nice, how you say, they're very cooling, and they're very refreshing, you know, they make the mind very peaceful. So in that way, then, everything goes very nicely. You know, and also putting the sandalwood paste, it takes hot airs out of the body, like this. So it's, you know, like that. It can be done both. But generally, in the practice for devotees, it's when they first come, we give like that. Means the point is, if one can have them, then it's nice. But otherwise, then if that's all one has, then that's all there is. You know. But point is being made is that Krishna likes flowers. He likes them better than ornaments, like that. So if one is making arrangement for so many ornaments and things like this, he likes flowers more than ornaments, like that. Yes. So one keeps a tulsi stick. Yeah, before offering, not after. Yeah. Okay. So we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Rupa Goswami Pada ki, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki, Janyata Gaura Prema. Means the point is, if one can have them, then it's nice. But otherwise, then if that's all one has, then that's all there is. You know. But point is being made is that Krishna likes flowers. He likes them better than ornaments, like that. So if one is making arrangement for so many ornaments and things like this, he likes flowers more than ornaments, like that. Yes. So one keeps a tulsi stick. Yeah, before offering, not after. Yeah. Yeah. So we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Rupa Goswami Pada ki, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki, Janyata Gaura Prema.